This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly sponsored by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. As a City supporter, we know you value delivery, and McDelivery is up there with the very best. You'll always be winning with McDelivery because just like Kevin De Bruyne, McDelivery puts your order right on a plate. So the only thing left to say is, are you in? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered as well. So that ordering today means some tasty rewards for you tomorrow. Only via the app at participating restaurants, 18 plus, rewards registration required, points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
A weird night at the Etihad, but City eased past Brentford to get back to winning ways and put an end to the 48-hour crisis that gripped the club. It's Wednesday, February 21st. I'm Adam Booker.
I'm Joe Ritchie.
I'm Alex Michelle.
And this is the City Report Podcast.
It is a thrilling start for Manchester City. The fastest ever goal in an FA Cup final. 2023 is the City treble year. Champions of England, FA Cup winners, and now, at last, champions of Europe. Manchester City are kings of Europe. Crown.
Welcome back to the City Report Podcast, your home for daily Manchester City content. I'm Adam Booker, and joining me today are my American partners in crime, Joe Ritchie and Alex Michelle, fresh off the back of City's 1-0 win against Brentford at home. Obviously, you're hearing this the next morning, but these are the immediate feelings, the immediate emotional response to that game. With kind of no time to breathe from the chaos that descended after the Chelsea draw, Joe, we're going to get straight into this and start picking through the bones of this game against Brentford. What were your initial thoughts on the game?
I mean, after the fact, I think I was a little bit more level-headed about it and you know, thinking that at the end of the day, this could have been a 3-4-0 performance had City brought their shooting boots. I mean, I think if you want to just look high level of numbers, you know, XG was somewhere around like 2.5 to Brentford's 0.35. So, you know, those numbers themselves tell you City were pretty dominant. They had 25 shots to Brentford's 6, 5 big chances to Brentford's 1. So I think as a whole, it could have been a much better score line that we would have been coming on here probably a lot more optimistic. I think looking bigger picture at the run of fixtures we have coming up, you know, this type of performance probably won't work against the top half of the table side. So kind of mixed emotions. I think, you know, there's some individual performances we'll talk about that were positive and some that may have been a little bit not so great. But overall, I'd give it like a 6.5 out of 10.
Alex, first off, welcome back to the show. I want to come to you now. Same question, initial thoughts. Do you agree with Joe that there's, you know, some positives, some negatives, and potentially it's the type of performance that City won't get away with down the stretch?
Yeah, I think so. I think also to note on the Chelsea result, because it did come in such quick succession, I think that was so disappointing because it felt like one of the first true big games of the season, and to see us not put in a super compelling performance there was a bit disappointing. And then here, I mean, it feels like deja vu because we just faced Brentford, but you know, Brentford are always going to be a tough opponent. I feel like you're always happy with a win no matter what sort of result it comes as, no matter what the scoreline is. And I think I was seeing some mixed reactions, especially at halftime, but I don't know, I felt pretty good as to what we saw today. I don't think it blew anyone out of the water, but it was still a solid performance. And yeah, I think sort of just three points and on to the next.
Yeah, and I think, Joe, an easy place to start here is with the lineup, because there was a couple question marks when we got the team news an hour ahead of kickoff. Obviously, Oscar Bob makes his first start in the Premier League. We'll get on to him in a minute, but I think the probably weirdest occurrence that we got from Pep was Akanji at left back. I can't remember seeing that at any point in Akanji's time at City. Perhaps there was some cup game or something, but I thought he did all right there. It had that feel of last season where, because of the protection from Stones and Rodri and players like that, the way that City were able to kind of camp on the box and probe and pick those little passes, he was weirdly an integral part of that, and he was picking little balls in behind. And I would say I'd rather see Akanji play left back than play the Stones role and stepping into midfield.
Yeah, it was definitely a surprise to see him start at left back. I mean, I think he played there once, maybe twice last season, but obviously not a regular occurrence. And, you know, for me, he was probably man of the match. I thought he was brilliant in pretty much every facet of the game. Pep talked in his pre-match press conference about, you know, can John Stones play multiple matches a week? And he's like, yeah, you know, paraphrasing, but he basically was like, yeah, but I want to get, you know, Manu back into form. You know, he hasn't been at his best, you know, so on and so forth. And I think tonight was, you know, message received, right? Obviously playing him a little bit out of position, but, you know, I think he covered a lot of ground. He almost had an absolute thunder bastard of a goal at one point, but I think defensively he was flawless. In an attacking sense, being way out of position, I actually thought he was better than what we've seen from Nathan Ake lately. I know the bar's not set super high in that sense, but I thought he was positive there. So all around, I think it was a decision that definitely paid off. And, you know, a left side of attack that's been a little bit dull lately had a little bit more involvement this time around.
Alex, as our resident tactics and predicted lineups man, was that a big shock to you when the team news came out and Akanji was at left back?
It was a bit of a shock. He has played there before a good amount of times. He started there at left back in the 4-1 against Arsenal last March?
Okay.
Last April. So he has played there for a good number of games, and it's always sort of on my radar when I'm predicting things. And I was more surprised to see him start Chelsea, and then once he starts Chelsea, it also sort of makes sense for him to start here and give Ake a rest, because Ake can't really play four games in a row, and you always kind of back him to start the game against Bournemouth. So it is a bit of a trick one there, and it makes sense in hindsight, but I didn't really see it coming. And yeah, I do think he played really well. I think when you're playing a team that drops that deep against City, he has that sort of, I mean, we saw that one shot that almost went in on top bins, and you know, he has that because he can just sort of sit there on the edge of the box. The angle sort of opens up for him on his right, and he doesn't have as much pressure as sort of like you were alluding to when he's playing in that Stones role and he has to play 360 degrees in this game. Pretty much the game's all in front of him, and then he just has to sort of make those wide defender moments whenever they come. So yeah, I thought he played really well, and I still wouldn't necessarily back him to play there if we're playing a big team. I mean, he's put in shifts before, but I think against a sort of team that drops deep like this, it works really well.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say, you know, I don't know if I'd want to see him there against Liverpool or somebody like that that's going to be a bit more direct and come bombing down the wings a bit more. But if you're telling me he played against Arsenal last season, you know, that's one of the biggest games you're going to get all year at this moment in time. So, Joe, let's come on to Erling Haaland. Obviously, tons of criticism after the Chelsea draw in which he had a historically bad day. I think he joined Sergio Aguero on failing to score on the most amount of chances in a single game for a City player in a long time. However, comes back in. We said on the pod a few days ago that the mentality he has is probably one that if he gets another chance, he's going to take it. He gets the chance, obviously a little bit of a slip from the defender that goes to his benefit, but he takes the chance, and that's really all he needs to do, isn't it?
Yeah, I have like a very niche American basketball reference. I mean, I guess it could be any basketball reference. It doesn't have to be American, but like when shooters are in a funk and they just need to get a rhythm going, it's always attack the hoop and just try to get to the foul line. I feel like that's how I interpreted Haaland's first 15, 20 minutes was just being involved, pressing, getting involved in the buildup, you know, things that we haven't really seen. Yes, he's been missing chances, but it also feels like he's just been totally out of the game, you know, above and beyond what we're used to. And so to see him kind of get so involved in the beginning, you know, shrug off, I think it was the Brentford left back.
Yeah,
Reguilon. Yeah, yeah. And then, you know, fire off a shot. Obviously, it didn't lead to a goal. But just to kind of see that hunger from the get-go to me was really positive. And I think it kind of showed in majority of his performance. It was a pretty well-rounded performance. I mean, I think, you know, he was probably a couple inches away of having a brace if it weren't for Kyle Walker being offside. So yeah, an all round, I think, a good performance. And obviously now he's scored against every team that he's facing in the Premier League. So it's another stat that he can hold up against the haters. So
Joe makes an interesting point, Alex. It felt like at the beginning of Erling Haaland's time at the club, if he wasn't scoring, he wasn't remotely involved in the game in any way, shape, or form. We've obviously seen all the stats, you know, the fewest amount of touches in the game and all that kind of stuff. But we've always said none of that really matters if he's scoring. But actually, these days, if he's not scoring, he is dropping a bit deeper. He's taking a bigger role in the press. And he's, you know, we saw him tracking out to the wing, like Joe said, to harry defenders and win the ball back. And that's got to be commended, because that is a huge sea change from the Haaland that we saw at the beginning of his time. And I think probably a big part of that is down to Pep. You know, you look at when Pep came in and basically said to Aguero, if you're not willing to run and do things off the ball when you're not scoring, you're not going to be in the team. I don't necessarily think he's had that conversation with Erling. I think he probably took that upon himself. But either way, it's fantastic to see.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that moment that Joe pulled out where he sort of tracked back after, it was either him or Foden who lost the ball and then just went after Reguilon and completely bodied him and won the ball back. Like, he may not still get that many touches in a game. I was kind of surprised because it felt like he was more involved today. And then I'm pulling it up right now on FootMob. He had 32 touches today, which is only 5 more than the Chelsea game. So the touches isn't that big of a difference, but just as you're saying, like, you can make an impact even without those touches off the ball. The work rate can be better. You can be even more intense. You can just sort of lead things in that sense and be a leader on the field. And yeah, I agree. He's doing that better and better with each game. And that's how it's going to go with a young player like that, even as good as he is.
Absolutely. And speaking of young players, we got to come on to Oscar Bob. Makes his first Premier League start, a moment that I think a lot of City fans have been crying out for, especially after the cameo in the Newcastle game where he comes on with a wonder goal to win it in stoppage time. Joe, what did you make of him? Because I think after that Chelsea game, there was a lot of debate over that starting lineup and the Doku and Grealish and Bernardo and Foden out wide, all of that conversation. And we get something completely fresh with Oscar Bob. And I think he probably made a decent impact. I think he played about 60 minutes, which is all you're probably going to see from a player that young in a Pep Guardiola team. But I thought, you know, he didn't seem like a kid that was getting his first shot, you know, in under the bright lights. He was a part of the team.
Yeah, Oscar Bob, or as I like to call him, the second best Norwegian in the Premier League. But yeah, I was glad to see him get a start. I mean, if people could. Hone in on our group chat, you'd probably just see me spamming Oscar Bob propaganda saying that he needs to start for quite a while now. And I think we got the perfect, you know, Oscar Bob experience tonight. He's just tidy. I think he's very much a Pep winger, doesn't really make mistakes. He's going to be high energy. He's going to kind of, you know, do the defensive duties when he needs to. I mean, if it weren't for that Ben Mee clearance off the line, he would have had what I thought was a spectacular goal. I mean, that fake shot was something out of like pro FIFA move. So I thought it was a great little cameo from him. I mean, it's one of those where I still think Doku has far more upside. But if you said you need to pick a player to just give you consistent minutes against a tough side, I'd be picking Oscar Bob right now. I just think he has that mentality and, you know, he looks like a player who's been playing in the City system for more than just a few months like Doku has. So I thought it was a little harsh to take him off at 60 minutes. I would have liked to see him play a little bit longer. But my hope is that, you know, with these games coming thick and fast, it's not his last Premier League start for the next couple weeks.
Yeah, Alex, down the stretch, obviously we've seen the kind of horrid stretch of games in March where it's basically a big six opponent every other week. Does Oscar Bob have any sort of role to play? If Grealish is fit, if Doku is fit, if Foden is fit and Bernardo is fit, is he totally on the periphery of the winger conversation, or are there games for him that he actually has a role and he can make a difference that maybe a Grealish or a Doku can't?
I think he probably should, but I think he probably won't. And sort of as Joe was saying there, like, I completely agree that he brings something else to the table, and he doesn't seem like this young guy. Like, he seems like a senior player. He's right there in amongst the mix. And I think if he had a different name, if he was a different age, if City signed him this summer, the perspective on him might be a bit different. You might view him differently than this little kid who grew up and played in the system and came through the academy. But I don't know. I think it'd probably be a bit unrealistic to expect too much out of him. I think he's probably capped at, I mean, he got his first Premier League start today. He's probably not going to get more than 3 or 4 on the season. I do think that the role that he has to play is that when those tough games come, you have some easier games around them, whether that's Luton away in the FA Cup, whether that's Copenhagen at home in the second leg, where that result is, you know, 90% plus guaranteed, whether it's Luton at home later in the season, Forest away, Wolves at home, just listing off these games that are sort of lower down the list in terms of priority. I think the role that he adds is you have a player that you can throw in to, you know, give those other guys a rest, and you know the level is not going to drop a single bit.
Let me ask you, Adam, what do you think his, you know, current level is, meaning, you know, what type of game are you comfortable with him seeing? You know, like Alex said, is it the return leg against Copenhagen? To me, that's probably unrealistic in terms of, you know, the Champions League and what it means. But I think, you know, competition wise, I'd be fine with him playing, you know, in terms of the opponent that is. But what do you see as his kind of level right now and where you'd want him to be starting versus maybe just a cameo appearance off the bench?
Realistically, I don't think he starts, potentially doesn't start another game the rest of the season. Unless, you know, City win all of their games in March, Liverpool and Arsenal drop a few points, and City are, you know, magically 10 points clear by April or something. But I think if it's this tight all the way down to May, I think that he doesn't start often, if ever. However, I think that with every cameo we get from him, whether it's 60 minutes tonight, 5 against Newcastle, I think he played, he didn't play from the start against, who was it? Sheffield United, but he came on off the bench in the second half and made a big impact. So I think that his status in the team is only growing with every passing day. And I think there's absolutely a role for him to play down the stretch, whether it's 15 minutes at the end of a game when it's 2-1 and City need the third goal to put a tie to bed or something like that, because he's a different type of player than anybody else you have on the left. I actually think he's almost the perfect hybrid of Jeremy Doku and Jack Grealish.
Yeah, I think one thing that you sort of maybe hinted at there is that if you don't start him in another game this season, and maybe that trickles into next season, you start to get into the territory where is he just going to become another Cole Palmer, where he gets frustrated with the lack of minutes that he's getting. And this is always the difficult thing, and I know Pep had a quote about it, is that, you know, you're sitting there in the moment, and yes, on one hand, you have to keep in mind that this is a player who you want for the long term, but on the other hand, the main priority is winning these games. And like you said, Adam, if it's going down to the end in the league, then he probably does not get another start, maybe one, maybe two. But I don't know. It's a tough thing because you don't want to see a player that talented walk away from the club because he's not getting enough playing time. And I think on a similar note, you know, Julian Alvarez is getting rewarded for that. He's started 25 out of 25 Premier League matches so far this season, and most of that is because he is performing. So it's a tough one there with Oscar Bob, because when he is performing, he gets that extra credit in the bank. And at the same time, Pep needs to focus on winning these games. So it's just such a tough catch-22 when it comes to managing a player like that.
I think what's really ironic timing-wise is it feels like he is having a Rico Lewis introduction, where coming into the season, people weren't expecting much of him. He's kind of, you know, he's not really transforming a position like Rico did, but he's coming in, you know, with the offhand appearance here and there, but ultimately it's like he's kind of showing Jack, how you can retain possession, but also be a little bit more, you know, attack minded, but at the same time showing Doku like, hey, you don't need to be full throttle all the time. You could also be a little bit more controlled, right? So it's like this young player that has so obviously spent so much time in the academy and in the City system, kind of showing these big money signings, like what the ideal setup is. So, you know, with that in mind, like Rico didn't play a ton last season, but, you know, his appearances were impactful. And I think that's what I would probably expect from Bob for the rest of the season is, you know, maybe it's 5, 6, 7 more appearances across all competitions. But if he can put in an FA Cup start and a couple off the bench and, you know, Champions League or, you know, league in the league, you know, to me, that's a good start leading into next season.
I think my hot take, I'm going to put this out here right now. I think Bernardo Silva finally leaves this summer. And I think, I think Oscar, it's been every summer for, you know, since the car was invented. I think Oscar Bob's future lies in how City react to Bernardo Silva leaving. Because Cole Palmer, as Alex compared him to Cole Palmer this summer basically said, and this was before the Jeremy Doku signing, you know, I'd like to be here. I'd like to have a bigger role in the team. But if they sign someone, I'll have a decision to make. Lo and behold, Doku comes in, Palmer's at Chelsea. Oscar Bob may have the same mentality. I could be the next guy up to step in and play those that little creative position in the pockets and out wide. And but then if they go and they spend somebody 70 mil on somebody from Ligue 1 or the Bundesliga, if I'm Oscar Bob, I'm, you know, trying to get a move away. And I wouldn't blame him for that. It would be a crying shame, but I wouldn't blame him for that. That'll do for part one. Stay right where you are. We'll be back in a quick moment.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The Etihad Stadium really is wonderful at this time of the season, and the same goes for McDelivery. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Welcome back to the City Report podcast, your home for daily Manchester City content. If you are new here, please hit follow, hit subscribe, leave a rating, leave a review unless it is a shit one. I want to come on to Rodri just for a brief second before we dig into some stuff that we reached out to the listeners for. There was a couple of comments I saw online and from our very own Amos Murphy, who was at the game last night, saying that Rodri looked tired. It was typical Rodri. He put in a 8 out of 10 performance, hardly put a foot wrong. But we see with Rodri every once in a while, he goes a bit pale. He's late to a couple of balls. And, you know, I'm sitting here thinking, oh, don't worry. Calvin Phillips can come on when it's, you know, 4-1 against Copenhagen or 5-1 against. Oh, wait a second. I'm looking at City's fixtures right here in front of me. Other than Copenhagen, which hopefully City get an early lead and you can take everybody off, I don't see a place for Rodri to have a seat for 90 minutes until maybe April 6th against Crystal Palace. But if by then you're in April and you're still neck and neck with Liverpool and Arsenal and you've got a 2-point lead or you're 2 points shy, he's playing every minute. Do we have a potential crisis on our hands here with the fact that basically, there is no solution to playing without Rodri? Because we've seen it. We've had our moments without Rodri this year, and it was a fucking train wreck. Joe, I'll come to you first.
I mean, I don't think it's a secret that City's season and potential success totally hinders on Rodri's availability. I have absolutely no faith in them winning any competition if he were to go down with an injury. And I think that's far more testament to his importance and ability than it is, you know, trying to knock the other players in the squad. But I just, he's far and away our best player, in my opinion. I think, you know, Kevin De Bruyne has these highs of something that other players in the world can't match. But, you know, Rodri's floor is a 7 out of 10. Like, that's the worst you're going to get out of him. He's now stepping into the true definition of a box-to-box role that I think gets thrown around way too easily, where created the most chances tonight, also shielded the defense, also brought control to the side. Like, he is so far and away crucial to everything that we do. And to your point, Adam, like, okay, so if you can make it till April 6th, well, at that point, you're in a run-in. So, like, you really can't rest him because every game's going to matter. You know, top three positions in the Premier League are separated by 2 points. So, I think right now the only game I'd feel probably comfortable in is Luton in the Cup. And that's probably it. So, I think it's one of those City are going to have to cross their fingers and hope that they can make it to the offseason and hopefully find some help in the transfer market. But for now, I don't see a capable alternative.
I think it was November, Alex, when Rodri was sent off against Forest, and we got a three-match stretch in which we got to see three different Pep Guardiola experiments of what he wanted to do without Rodri. We got Mateus Nunes and Kovacic together in a double pivot, train wreck. We got Rico Lewis and Kovacic together at Arsenal. I wouldn't call it a train wreck, but City were really stale, lost the game on a face deflection. And then we got Calvin Phillips by himself in the Cup, train wreck. What's the option going forward? Is it a combination of one of those three things? Is it John Stones? Is it playing 18 midfielders and putting everybody in the middle of the field and hoping nothing gets through?
Is it Pep Guardiola?
Is it Pep Guardiola?
I mean,
roll back the years there. I think the answer is there really just isn't a solution, and that's why
forfeiture. So the solution is forfeiture.
yeah.
No, I mean, in that case, I do think probably you try to go sort of with like a midfield trio, sort of like we've seen recently, and you go Kovacic, Stones, and one more, whoever that may be. But yeah, I just think the drop off is so steep between Rodri in the squad and Rodri not in the squad that you have to just hope that his muscles hold up. Like, looking back at his log throughout his 6 seasons prior to this, he has played pretty much, there's one season that's 2,480 minutes, but pretty much 2,500 minutes every single season or more. Some seasons close to touching 3,000 minutes. One at Villarreal where he played 3,200 minutes. This guy is just a fitness machine, and you do have those moments where he looks a bit tired. You try to get him a rest. Sometimes you can't really make it work. He knows how crucial he is to the squad. The physios know how crucial he is to the squad. I think everyone at the club knows that, and you just do your best. Just keep it together so that, as Joe said, if he's not there, you kind of lose a lot of hope.
So the answer to, let me get this straight. The answer to what do we do if Rodri is unfit is keep Rodri fit. I think that's the perfect, perfect answer. All right, real quick before
you don't have a crisis if you don't get there
exactly,
in the first place.
Exactly. Real quick before we get out of here, we put out a tweet from the podcast account at City Report Pod on all social medias. Give us a follow if you haven't already. We put out a tweet asking you guys, are City better or worse than this time last season? We had a couple of responses I want to bring up. Luke says points-wise, definitely better off. Performance-wise, not so much. Joe, you responded slightly worse, but with higher upside. We'll get into that in a moment. Nabil, the King of City Report, says at this stage of the respective seasons, we're better now. Feels about the same. Worse. So we've had a couple of contrasting opinions here. Now, I just want to point out that this time last season, just a few weeks before this time last season, we had an episode of this podcast called What the Fuck is Wrong with Manchester City? just for a bit of context. And then the Premier League charges come in early February, Joe, and we get kind of a rocket up the ass. And I will say that essentially on this day last year was the horrific 1-1 draw at Forest after beating Arsenal at the Emirates. So I'll ask you, are City better off last season at this time or this season?
It feels like City are, there's a lot of similarities in that City are still kind of trying to find themselves. I mean, you know, this time last year, like you said, that Forest game was honestly, not too dissimilar to today, where a lot of wasted chances. You know, I think City could have been undone on the counter today, and we could have been having the exact same conversation 1 year later. And then after that, you know, they had a 1-1 draw with Leipzig away. But again, that's kind of Champions League. After that, they rifled off 10 straight wins. If you told me City had 10 straight wins coming up, I'd probably disagree just based on the schedule. But if you told me, you know, is this current team capable of putting together 10 straight wins? I'd say totally. It's just about, it's been far different of a season with key players being in and out with injury, suspension, off the field issues, right? It's, you know, the context matters. So like I said, my tweet, I think the upside's higher. I think this team has, you know, another season on from last year's success. I think they are probably actually more flexible as a side. It's just availability and durability at this point that'll determine how far they can really go.
Alex, we were talking before we hit record about this, and one thing that's really interesting is this time last year was when City were right on the precipice of finding that John Stones 3-2-4-1 that we all came to know and love, and that City rode to a treble. It almost feels like we're in the similar boat now, where if you go on Twitter right now and search the word system, you're going to see about 8,000 City fans at the top of the results just screaming about the system. What's the system? I don't get the system. This system is crap. Blah, 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 blah. Are we in a similar situation where it feels like towards the end of the winter, early spring, City are still trying to kind of figure out how to best oil the machine?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's the typical sort of cycle with Pep. I think you get to around this point in the season, and over the course of the next month or so, as you get into March in the last 3 months of the season or 2.5 months of the season, you really nail down a sort of like ethos of the team and a really strong core. And then you just see out the rest of the season, just progressing that core as far as you can. And I think going back to what Joe said about the schedule, the different thing from now to last season, and to directly answer the question, I think we're slightly worse than where we were last season, but it's not so much of a difference as to relative to the silverware. I think we can still go on and win everything. But I do think that we don't really have that core idea yet, and we don't necessarily need to, but with the fixtures coming up as they are in March, you sort of do need it at the same time. So that's the tricky
Are there thing. Hints? Are there hints that City are building towards one? Because I will
so,
say
yeah.
In that late January, early February range last season, we were starting to see Rico Lewis emerge and play that inverted fullback that eventually became the John Stones role. And we were seeing City play with four center backs or five defenders on the pitch. So is there something that we've seen in the last few weeks that is hinting at one of those potential core systems coming?
I think so. I might have a slightly rambly answer here. I'll try to keep it as concise as possible. I think that the 3-2, what we're talking about, the Stones role, is still a central idea to what Pep wants. I don't think he would be playing Manu Akanji in that sort of role in these big games throughout the season if he didn't still rely on that. At the same time, we know that in that system, if you put your fourth defender in midfield and you have the back three of defenders remaining, that front five has to be a sort of true front five. Like the wingers have to be the wingers that are there out of possession. The repercussions of that are, one, you have to rely on Grealish or Doku on the left. Two, Foden, unless we know Pep's not going to play him centrally. Foden's playing with his boots on the chalk line. You don't really want that now with the system, not the system that we have, but the personnel that we have. And so what Pep has started to do this season is push those fullbacks, Vardiol and Walker on either side, higher and higher so that the winger on each of those sides can tuck in. And I think what he's working towards is a system where you have the best of both worlds, where in some moments of the game, Stones steps into midfield and it's the 3-2 as we know it. In some moments of the game, Stones drops back as he did today into the back three. You have Walker or Vardiol go up on either flank and you allow Foden, whichever side he's on, you allow Grealish at some moments to tuck inside, and you sort of get everything at once. But the difficulty of that is these players need to be able to read those situations, and it becomes far more complex when you're trying to merge two systems into one.
Alex, that is exactly why we brought you onto this podcast. Clip that up and put it on a resume. I don't care what job you're applying for. All right, that'll do for us today. Thank you very much for tuning in. We will be back tomorrow, as always, to begin to look ahead to this weekend. Joe, thank you very much.
Thank you, Adam.
Alex, thank you.
Thanks a lot, Adam. Always a pleasure.
Listeners, thank you for tuning in. Until next time, see you later.
Make sure you're geared up for Man City's end of season run-in with McDelivery. Great food delivered right to your door. By using McDelivery, you won't miss a moment of City's crucial run-in, and just like Kevin De Bruyne, they deliver your order exactly where you want it. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. Are you in? At participating restaurants only, 18 and plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.